Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of History and Zoomer, Cartago de Lenda Est. I'm Rolly.
And I'm Maddie.
Today we're going to talk about the Second and Third Punic Wars. We'll also emphasize the lives of Scipio Africanus, Scipio Aemilianus, and Hannibal Barca. We'll also talk about two of my favorite apocryphal stories in history.
What do you mean? The world ended twice?
What?
You said there was two apocalypses, didn't you?
No, apocryphal, which is pretty much like a story. That means a story that most people agree isn't true, but still gets thrown around like it's true.
Silly me.
Anyway, it's going to end in fire and destruction, and it's going to be one hell of a ride, I think. What do you think, Maddie?
All right, I'm ready to get into it. Let's do it.
All right, so, but first, let's get some pleasantries out of the way. The last time you and I sat down, I think it was like midsummer. Now it's early fall, so tell me, how is it being back on campus?
It's good to be back in college. I had a great summer. I went out of state to see my best friend, and my sister visited. You know, it was a good time. I did some good stuff. What about you?
I think I mentioned last time that I was headed to Rome, so I did visit Rome with someone pretty close to me. We had a great time for a week, so a lot of the things that we've been talking about on the podcast and things that we'll talk about in the future. Other than that, my summer was pretty laid back, which is how I like it. So great. All right, so now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's talk about the Punic Wars and why they matter. So far we spent one episode talking a little bit about the myth of the founding of Rome, and then a couple episodes talking about the struggle, civil wars, betrayals, and everything else that led to the downfall of the Roman Republic and the birth of the Roman Empire. But Maddie, have you ever wondered how we got here?
Not really. It's not something that crosses my mind on the daily, but I'm interested in hearing it.
Right, because how did Rome, a city-state that was essentially founded on 7 small hills somewhere in the middle of the Italian peninsula, get to dominate the Mediterranean world? Do you have any ideas?
Honestly, I have absolutely none.
So there really is a lot to the story, and there isn't a simple answer, but a lot of it begins with Rome gaining control of the Italian peninsula, the whole peninsula. And I can't promise that we'll get into the Italian conquest and the so-called social wars this season. But suffice it to say that Rome outlasted all of its rivals in the Italian peninsula. And when the Italian matter was settled, they controlled the whole peninsula. So once Rome established itself as the major power in Italy, clashes with other regional major powers were going to be inevitable. So to the east of Italy, you had the Greek successor kingdoms of Alexander the Great's empire. To the south and west, Carthage and its holdings in Africa, Spain, and potentially the island of Sicily. We will talk about the Greek wars this season because they're a lot of fun. But today we're going to talk about the wars with Carthage. There were a total of 3 Punic Wars.
Okay.
So just to quickly explain why we call them Punic Wars, Carthage was founded as a colony of the Phoenician people. So Carthaginians were ethnically Phoenician. So Phoenician breaks into Punic, so they call it the Punic Wars.
All right.
The first Punic War, which we won't get into in great detail, began over what was essentially a local squabble in Sicily. An aggrieved party asked Rome to interfere on its behalf. The opposing party, also in Sicily, asked Carthage to do the same. Both cities sent armies. The armies eventually fought to a standstill on land, but after some setbacks, the Romans won multiple victories at seas that essentially forced Carthage to the bargaining table because they lost their navy. As a result of this bargaining, Carthage gave up control of Sicily, making it Rome's first province, and paid a huge sum of money to Rome. But not everyone on the Carthaginian side was happy with this peace treaty. One man in particular, Hamilcar Barca, was very, very unhappy.
Sounds like a Boof Hamilton. Hamilcar Barfa.
It's Hamilcar Barca.
Hamilcar Barca.
Yeah.
All right, got it.
He felt that they should not have made peace in the first place. He also felt that the peace terms were way too good for the Romans, and he was extremely concerned about the rising power of the Romans and how that could affect the future of Carthage.
Scared of them.
Spoiler alert, he was right to be scared. The story goes that he hated Rome so much that he made his then 9-year-old son, Hannibal, swear a sacred oath before the gods that he would eternally hate and destroy Rome.
Well, let's hope that he tried to keep his word, Mr. Hannibal.
Oh, he did. He certainly did. This oath will set the stage for the Second Punic War, the war that nearly destroyed Rome before it ever became an empire.
Oh.
So after the First Punic War, despite the concessions they made, Carthage still controlled Africa, portions of Spain, and the islands of Sardinia and Corsica, which are to the west of Italy. Rome held, of course, Italy, and now Sicily. Things were looking good for a temporary peace, but the Carthaginians were notoriously cheap and didn't pay the mercenaries that they had employed during the First Punic War.
Okay.
And Maddie.
Yeah.
What do you think happens when soldiers who have weapons don't get paid?
They get mad. They want to get paid.
Right. And so what do they do when they get mad?
They riot.
Pretty much. They revolted. Along with that mutinous revolt by the mercenaries came revolts by local leaders of Carthage's provincial holdings. So other cities in Africa, Spain, those islands we just discussed. Carthage eventually put down the revolt in Africa and prepared to sail to the island of Sardinia to punish rebels there. But Rome said no. They sent troops there, and Carthage did not want to go to war with Rome again, so they let it go. This pissed off Hamilcar even more. He sailed to the Carthaginian holdings in Spain and began a very large settlement there. Spain was extremely rich in silver and other resources. So he went there to kind of get back a lot of the money that Carthage owed Rome and to pay it back sooner.
Wait, remind me, why was this Hamilcar guy, like, important? What was his role in society?
He was, like, the chief general of the Carthaginian army during the First Punic War.
Oh, okay.
And like, a noble of their society, one of the leaders, you know?
Okay, yeah, I was wondering, like, why he's such a powerful guy, you know?
Yeah. So, he goes to Spain, starts mining the resources, strengthening Carthage. Rome, of course, was not happy about this, but also wanting to avoid another war. Because remember, the first war they won, but it wasn't like an easy win.
Yeah, not by a landslide.
Right. They signed the treaty stating that Rome would not interfere as long as Carthage kept everything they were doing below a river named the Ebro.
The Ebro. Never heard of it.
Yes. Now, interestingly enough, there was one city called Saguntum, which is modern-day Segundo in Spain, which had a peace treaty with Rome. And that is essentially the genesis of the Second Punic War. So I'll give you the details of the war in a nutshell. The war began when Hannibal, who was now commanding, that was the kid that swore the oath to destroy the Romans, was laid siege to the city of Saguntum. Rome demanded his surrender because they were allies. Hannibal refused, and so Rome declared war. Hannibal was a crazy guy. He responded with one of the boldest, most interesting, crazy stories in history. He led his army, including elephants, from Spain.
Oh, wow.
From Spain, across the Alps and into Italy.
I wonder if they had those scary Roman dogs. You know what I'm talking about? What are they called? The Cane Corsos? Is that right?
So I think the Cane Corsos are the descendants of Roman dogs. And the Romans did put them to use against the elephants as the war went on, but the Romans were not, like, in the Alps actively. The Alps are, like, this mountainous, really snowy, really mountainous region that essentially serves as, like, a place where, like, Spain, northern Italy, and France all kind of, like, they don't meet there, but it's the area that you have to kind of go through to get through the three countries in Europe.
Right.
So he just walked his army rather than sailing or doing what most people would do. He just walked his army and the elephants over the Alps.
Oh, okay.
The Romans were absolutely not expecting this.
It sounds like a crazy plan.
So he fought them outside of a city called Trebia, and he defeated the Romans there. A year later, he fought them at Lake Trasimene, and he defeated them again. And then, in 216 BC, he fought them at the Battle of Cannae, which is... No one disputes that it's one of the most devastating defeats of Romans in Roman history. I believe it is the most devastating defeat of Romans in Roman history. The numbers say that 80,000 Romans were killed.
Oh, wow.
Most modern historians will tell you that that's an exaggeration, but still, for a society, you know, that wasn't obviously nearly as populated as the modern world today, to lose 30, 40,000 men of fighting age is disastrous.
Yeah, totally. Hannibal owned them.
He did for a while. the worst part of all this is that a lot of the Italian allies that were under Roman, you know, control, because Rome controlled that entire peninsula, started defecting to Hannibal. But remember we talked about Latium, the area that supposedly Aeneas first came to, and that's where Rome and all those major cities were in that area?
I do.
That area was stayed completely loyal to Rome. They refused to side with Hannibal and fought him the entire way. Because of this, Hannibal never really approached Rome directly, and he just went around Italy and just devastated the countryside and fought them in small battles. Rome elected a consul named Fabius Maximus, and he is the inventor of what's called Fabian tactics, which is definitely hide and run. He just led Hannibal around the countryside, but never offered him battle. So because of this, he was never able to win a decisive battle or strike at Rome directly after Cannae. Rome got smart, and they said, well, you bought your army here. We're going to do the same. They took these two brothers named the Scipios and sent them to Spain with an army. That campaign was going well until their army got separated, and then they both got beaten in a battle and killed. Enter onto the world stage Publius Cornelius Scipio, soon to be known as Scipio Africanus.
What a name.
He was like 23, 24 years old, very young, proved to be an absolutely brilliant general. He captured New Carthage in Spain. He defeated the Carthaginian armies at Alipa and essentially completely threw Carthage out of Spain and organized it as a full province for Rome. Scipio then came back home, was elected consul after some bitterness with the Roman Senate, and took the army to North Africa with the support of a fellow named Massinissa, who was a Numidian prince that had been loyal to Carthage until switching sides and swearing loyalty to Rome. Scipio was running roughshod over the North African countryside, and Carthage had to recall Hannibal from Italy. So Hannibal came back.
Wait, so what is a Numidian prince? Where is that?
Numidia was a country in the western, northern part of Africa. And they were under Carthage's control, much like the cities in Italy were under Rome's control.
So they were dedicated to Rome because they didn't want to be under Carthage's control anymore?
Yes. This fellow basically became friends with Scipio. They signed the treaty, and he lent him his cavalry, which is what they were known for. Numidian cavalry was supposed to be among the best cavalry in the world. Those are riders on horseback.
Okay.
And Scipio and Hannibal finally met at the Battle of Zama, where Scipio outmaneuvered Hannibal, destroyed his army, and forced Carthage to sue for peace.
Wow.
The peace stripped Carthage of its navy and overseas possessions, imposed a crushing indemnity, so they had to pay Rome all sorts of money.
Uh-huh.
But most importantly, and this is what's going to lead us to part three of this tragedy, I guess, forbade Carthage from waging war at all, even in its own defense, without Rome's permission.
Oh, wow. How is that even possible? I don't understand.
Because you signed basically, when you're losing the war like that, you either sign the treaty or they take your city.
Ah. What makes them, stay true to the treaty? Why can't they just wage war and then face the consequence?
Stay tuned. You'll find out a little bit later in this podcast whether or not they hold true, and if they don't, what the consequences are.
Oh, great. Okay, I'm ready.
So as the treaty ended, Rome essentially came out as the undisputed power in the Western Mediterranean. They had control of North Africa, Spain, Italy, Sicily, Corsica, and Sardinia. And on the other side of that, Carthage lost all of its possessions outside of Africa, and Spain was fully annexed by Rome now. So all of a sudden, Spanish silver, slaves, manpower, and everything started coming into Rome for Rome's usage.
So Rome is in control of Spain now?
Yes, completely, completely control. They had control of the north a little bit, but now it's under complete Roman control, and it would remain so until around 400 AD. So for a good 600 years, Spain was officially a part of the Roman Empire.
Okay.
Military restrictions, as I said, Carthage was only able to keep 10 warships, and that was for just coastal defense. They couldn't raise an army, and elephants were banned. So they can no longer use elephants in war.
Oh, poor elephants. I mean, no, they're probably happy.
Yeah, probably. I'm sure that they're. Carthage also had to recognize that Gaius Massinissa as an independent ruler, no longer under their control. And Massinissa was told by the Romans that he was able to, if he wanted to do a little looting and plundering on Carthaginian soil, he was free to do so. And obviously, because Carthage couldn't raise an army, he was free to do what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So, in short, Carthage lost its empire, its fleet and its elephants.
The worst part.
Its independence in foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
And a ton of money.
So unfortunate.
So
R.I.P.
Well, not quite yet. Not quite yet. They're going to make a little bit of a comeback. That's why there's a third war. But here's one of my favorite apocryphal stories of all time. So Hannibal stayed in Carthage for a while, trying to reform the state's finances and politics to get him out of the hole they were in. But at some point, he was exiled by the Carthaginians because they thought he was being still too rebellious and dangerous to Carthage. And he started traveling through the Eastern Mediterranean and actually consulting with Greek kings on how to fight the Romans. At one point, he had dinner, believe it or not, in Ephesus with Scipio Africanus. The king of Ephesus guaranteed safety for both men. And during this dinner, it was supposedly a pretty friendly dinner, and Scipio asked Hannibal who he believes the three greatest generals in history are. Hannibal said Alexander the Great was the first.
Okay.
Pyrrhus of Epirus was the second. Doesn't matter who Pyrrhus is, but he was a great general. And then Hannibal said that he himself, Hannibal, was the third greatest general of all time.
Wow, what a confident guy.
It gets a little better, though. So Scipio supposedly smiled and said, well, what if you had beaten me at Zama? And Hannibal said, then I would put myself first. So the backhanded compliment to Scipio was that essentially the only thing stopping him from being the greatest ever was that he could have beat Scipio. So I just think that's a really cool story. Yeah, where
kind of some glaze there.
A little bit, yeah. So as discussed, they had no more empire, no more navy, no more military freedom. But what they did have is the freedom to rebuild their economy, because the Carthaginians, being Phoenicians, were great traders, and they were able to do so. And sooner than later, they started rebuilding the economy and paying off their debt to Rome early, which was starting to scare the Romans, because they knew that, you know, that debt being paid back would be like the major factor stopping them from hoarding some money and arms and then raising an army again. That would be too big to just enforce on.
Yeah.
One guy named Cato the Elder was a Roman senator, notoriously cheap, hated Carthage with a passion, and every speech he ever ended said he would end it with these words: this is my opinion on this matter, being the opinion on whatever he was just talking about, and Carthago delenda est, which means Carthage must be destroyed. So no matter what they were talking about, no matter what he was talking about, he would give his opinion, say this is my opinion, and then end it by saying Carthage must be destroyed, which is aptly the title of this episode. So Massinissa, now an old man, took the Romans at their word and said, I'm going to begin encroaching and raiding on Carthaginian territory, because why not?
Yeah, why not?
Right. Well, Carthage was like, because it's ours, so they fought back. Rome sent someone saying, you need to stop fighting, or we're going to come get you. We have a deal. And Carthage said, no, I'm going to keep fighting. Then Rome finally sent an ultimatum saying, either abandon your city and move inland, or we're coming to get you. Carthage said no and decided to fight.
Hell yeah.
So Rome sent an army, and it seems like they may have underestimated the strength of the city itself, because for 2 years they were unable to breach the walls and take the city. The Carthaginians were even launching soldiers, or it's called a sortie, when you come out of the walls to fight a quick battle and come back in, just to harass the Romans, kill their men, kill their morale. And things were not going well. But 2 years after the start of the war, the Senate appointed a fellow named Publius Cornelius Scipio Aemilianus as the commander. He was the adoptive grandson of Scipio Africanus, the hero of the Second Punic War. Scipio reorganized the army, built siege engines and towers, and he blockaded Carthage from supplies. So, by doing that, Carthage had to get a little more desperate in the fighting. They did. The towers and engines did their jobs and broke the walls down. And eventually, the Romans got through the walls, and the siege ended with basically brutal hand-to-hand urban street fighting. And they worked their way from the outside all the way to the inside of the city and just killed everyone, but also lost a lot of people. It was one of the bloodiest engagements in Roman history as well, but the Romans did eventually win.
So was that the Third Punic War?
That was the Third Punic War in a nutshell, yeah.
Damn. So now, you think that was the worst of the three?
The second one was definitely the worst war itself, right? Like, as far as losses and battles and stuff, I mean, it was brutal. Definitely more battles fought, more people lost. It was fought across Italy, Spain, Sicily, and Africa, right? Where this Third Punic War was just a siege that just took a little longer than the Romans thought it would.
Yeah.
So are you ready for my second apocryphal story? I love this one too.
Okay, I'm ready.
So after the siege ended, the Romans took the city, and the legend says they set it on fire and took the people of the city and redistributed them into either slavery or other parts of Africa. Essentially, there was no more Carthage, right? Carthaginian people were no longer existent because there was no longer a city.
So they were, just African now?
Yeah, African or slaves. They might have still been Carthaginian, but they weren't allowed that, you know, because they weren't having kids, and the basically ended the race, right? Or the ethnicity.
Yeah.
So while the city was burning, Scipio Aemilianus, who was the general, was standing outside the walls and was crying. And this guy named Polybius, who was his friend and a Greek historian, asked him why he cried, because surely this was a glorious moment for him. And Scipio answered that it was, in fact, a great victory, but that he wept because he knew that someday his country would meet the same fate.
Oh, wow.
If you flash forward around 1600 years to 1453, this pretty much is how the Turks took the last vestige of the Roman state, Constantinople, essentially by a siege, broke the walls, street fighting, killed everyone. That was it. It was,
So he was right.
If this is true, he was right. And I will say this isn't like revisionist history, because this story dates back to Polybius, who lived in that time, right? So it was much longer than he had no idea there would even be a Constantinople or anything.
Right.
So I guess we ended on how did it end for our heroes and villains, or is it villains and heroes? I guess it depends on whose perspective you're telling the story from. But since we are focusing this season on the Roman Empire, I guess the Romans are the heroes and the Carthaginians are the villains. So Hannibal, though respected at home, soon entered politics and was elected chief magistrate. He reformed Carthage very well, but Rome feared his influence. Roman envoys accused him of plotting against them, and he was made to go into exile, as I said, because the Carthaginian Senate was afraid of Rome. They were still very weak and couldn't fight yet. So, as I mentioned earlier, he went around, offered his talents to different Greek kings as they fought either politically or actual wars with Rome or just diplomatically with Rome. He kind of went from place to place. But eventually the Romans put on enough pressure on these Greek kings to surrender him. And instead of being captured and paraded in a Roman triumph, much like Cleopatra, Hannibal chose to kill himself. He took poison that he apparently had concealed in a ring. And according to legend, his last words mocked Rome for being unable to wait patiently for the death of an old man.
Oh, wow. These people really have a thing for killing themselves.
Yeah, and what do you think of Hannibal's just literally hating and just dogging Rome even as he's dying?
I think that he's He's a little savage.
Well, you asked me if he took that oath seriously, so what are your thoughts on that?
He didn't. Or no, he did.
He kept it, yeah. He was unable to destroy Rome.
He did.
But he definitely tried his best.
But he tried. Yeah, he tried really hard, clearly.
All right, so what happened to Scipio Africanus? This is, as I said to you at the end of our last episode, this is my favorite of all the Romans. And it's kind of heartbreaking how it all ends for him. But so after his great victory over Hannibal in Zama, Scipio was celebrated as Rome's savior and given the honorific title Africanus. So he was known as Scipio Africanus. He enjoyed prestige and briefly dominated Roman politics. But as we've talked about multiple times throughout the course of the first three episodes, the Roman political system was always suspicious of any single man getting too much power, and Scipio faced political rivals, particularly a faction led by that guy Cato the Elder. Scipio remained active for a time. He and his brother went out east and fought one of those Greek kingdoms, and it's funny, that's, I think, is where he met Hannibal for that dinner. He was advising the king against Rome, but his influence began to wane. After he put them down and went back home, enemies in the Senate started accusing him and his family of corruption, especially regarding the spoils of that war. So they were basically saying that he went there, won the war, and kept the money instead of bringing it back to the state. Scipio refused to go over his books, so he took them to the Senate, ripped them up, and reminded everyone that it was the anniversary of Zama, where if it wasn't for him, Rome would have been destroyed. Despite his defiance, the constant political battles wore him down, I think like they would to anybody, and he withdrew from public life, went to a villa in Campania, and eventually grew old and died. And
A villa like Love Island?
So villas were like large Roman homes, right, that had like kind of like, there were little compounds with pools and stuff. It was pretty cool, and the rich had them.
Fiji?
I don't think anyone even knew Fiji existed in Rome at the time, but the concept of the modern villa, yeah, it does come from Roman times.
Interesting.
So he died, and as he was dying, they say ancient sources will tell you that he refused to be buried at Rome. And as a final of gesture of bitterness, he wrote on his tombstone, "Ungrateful fatherland, you shall not even have my bones." So basically saying, like, after everything you did for me, the way you treated me, I'm not even going to let you have the bones of my body. One cool thing, too, is that apparently both him and Hannibal died in the same year, in 183 BCE, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Kind of like two of the greatest figures in more likely the history of the world, and certainly in their period of time, who just spend their lives fighting each other, both died of old age. One through suicide, but still was old, and the other guy just of old age at the same time. So what happened?
It was kind of like destiny.
Yeah. Don't they say, I guess it's a little off subject, that Thomas Jefferson and John Adams died on the same day too? So that's another pretty cool one. They were kind of like rivals in the...
Yeah. I've heard that. So weird.
So Scipio Aemilianus, the last guy we'll kind of close out here. He earned lasting fame as the general who captured and destroyed Carthage. After he won, he went back to Rome, and he was certainly one of the most influential men there. In 134 BC, he was elected consul, and that was illegally because he was below the minimum age requirement. But again, he's like, who's going to stop me, right? This kind of leads into the start of what we talked about with the early life of Julius Caesar, the Gracchi, and those guys. He also went to Spain, defeated a rebel Spanish tribe in Numantia. They called him Numantius. He was also a central figure in Roman intellectual life, which I think is one of the reasons they didn't like him. He was the patron of the Scipionic Circle, a group of philosophers, poets, statesmen, including this guy Polybius that we talked about, who wrote about Rome's rise and kind of brought about Greek culture to the very warlike Romans. And the Romans had not really like fully Hellenized themselves yet, culturally speaking. But despite his prestige, you know, he did clash with the populares that, again, we talked about in the episode of Julius Caesar, who were just coming to power as he was getting into his 40s and 50s. And he refused to side with them. And 129 BC, he was reelected council. He apparently was going into the Senate to stop one of these popularity laws that was trying to get passed, and he just was found dead in his bed. Some people say he was murdered. It's never been proven, but the bottom line is he was 56 years old, dead way too soon. And I guess we'll never really know what could have happened, because he was a pretty smart guy, both militarily and politically. You know,
what is your take on it?
Yeah, Milianus is like a weird guy, right? So he doesn't get the good or bad rap that Scipio gets, because there's people who love Scipio, people who don't like him at all. But definitely he was a bridge between Rome and Greece. You know, this is around the time where Rome was starting to conquer the Greek territories in the east, and Scipio was all about the conquest, but was all about taking what was good from Greek, importing it. Something the Romans were always great at is importing things from places they conquered that were good and turning them Roman and kind of putting a Roman twist on them, but still leaving like the spirit of what was imported, right? So
yeah.
So yeah, and then at the end of the day, what I think is that he was just another reminder that goes across close to 2,000 years that no matter how great you could be in Rome, it's so easy to be undone by just anger, jealousy, bitterness, whatever. Rome was always its own greatest enemy, right? And we'll continue to learn that, I think, as we do these episodes. But so, Manny, I think we started this episode saying, you know, how did Rome get where it was in the episodes we've talked about? And then,
yeah,
you know, the conquest of Carthage and later on, a little bit later on, the Eastern Greek kingdoms. It bought money into Rome. It bought slaves into Rome. Prestige into Rome. Guys who were essentially just hardcore farmers and fighters and just had like these very strict, stringent set of laws. They were not like ostentatious by any means, started to become so, right? So like they started getting like the Greek life of like nobility and living better and, you know, relaxing. The rich people stopped employing the Romans and started using slaves. We talked about in the last episode, but there was just so much money, so much opportunity that it led to all of the steps which brought us to the beginning of episode one, which is the murder of Julius Caesar and the fight between Octavian and Antony. And I really believe that everything that happened before this put Rome in a place that it could fight people like Carthage and Greece or the Greek kingdoms.
Yeah.
But this moment is what kind of turned Rome from a regional mid-level power into essentially like the superpower basically in the entire Western world.
And how the Roman Empire came to be.
Yeah, certainly the first provinces came under Roman control during these wars. And once Rome got a taste of money and power and manpower and slaves and all that stuff, and then also the military glory that came along with those conquests, it was kind of hard to stop them. So I want you to tell me what you think of the three main characters, which are Hannibal, Scipio Africanus, and Scipio Aemilianus.
Well, I think that, you know how a lot of people say, like, they want to find their purpose in life?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that the rivalry that Scipio and, what was it, Hannibal? I keep forgetting his name.
Hannibal.
Hannibal, yeah. I think their rivalry was definitely a way to live life, since it lasted, like, you know, their whole time of living. I really think that they lived life to the fullest by beefing with each other and staying dedicated to what they wanted. And the fact that they died in the same year, I really just think it was, you know, they did what they were supposed to do, and that shows.
Yeah, so it's funny you say that. So if you'll indulge me, you may or may not know this, but I'm a big fan of the band U2.
Oh, really? I actually didn't know that. But I like them too, a lot.
Do you really?
Yeah.
There's a song called Cedars of Lebanon.
Right. I've heard of it.
And the line, it is, choose your enemies carefully because they will define you. Make them interesting because in some ways they will mind you. They're not there in the beginning, but when your story ends, gonna last with you longer than your friends. And I think the story of Hannibal and Scipio,
I think it's definitely represented by that line. Line.
Perfectly, right?
Yeah, it's almost like he wrote it for them.
Maybe so.
Maybe.
I don't know if Bono's a big history buff, but it would be funny if he had those guys in mind. Certainly.
Oh, you guys would be best friends if that was the case.
Yeah, I would love to meet him someday. So what do you think of Scipio Aemilianus? He didn't really have like a particular foe. He just had to get the job done. And he was kind of the guy, as I said, who set.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't have much to say about him because, I don't know, I just thought the other two were more interesting, to be honest. But, you know, he did what he had to do. He got his job done. And, you know, I think his death was kind of mysterious, kind of nonchalant of him. But
I don't think he intended to die. I don't think if it was nonchalant of him, I'm sure if it was up to him, he would have woken up that morning and gone to the Senate and done what he had to do, right? So either he had a heart attack or something, because he wasn't, like, ill, right? So it wasn't, like...
So it was, like, completely random.
From what they say in the sources, he went to bed fine, talking to his wife and family about what he needed to do in the Senate the next day. And when they went to get him, like, hey, man, it's time to get going, he was dead. So
it's just really strange.
In modern times, and I mean, I don't think humans have evolved that much, right? When something like that happens, it's usually either like a heart attack, a stroke, or
old age.
Well, no, 56. He wasn't old, right? So
yeah, I guess. But I thought 50 was like pretty old for that time, you know?
Yeah, but not old enough that you just wake up dead. It was old because there was no modern medicine and sicknesses that wouldn't even make a 55-year-old today blink could kill a 55-year-old back then, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're getting a little out of time, but my point is he either had, like, something sudden, like a burst artery or something like that, or he was murdered. And interestingly, because of what he was looking to do and because of the way Roman politics were going at the time, murder seems like the likely suspect.
Yeah, I was going to say this might sound bad, but I kind of hope he was murdered because it just makes it all more a little interesting, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's 2,000 years later, right? 2,200 years later, whatever the math is. So I guess it doesn't sound that bad. It is what it is. He's dead either way.
Exactly.
And we'll never know is ultimately the bottom line. So anyway, that's going to wrap up the Punic Wars. Just want to make pretty excited about a quick announcement. So far, Maddie, we've done a lot of talking here about men, right?
We have. Definitely that.
Outside of, you know, a little bit on Cleopatra in our first episode, and I think I ended by, you know, just kind of saying some stuff about her that I thought, you know, I like her as a figure. But when you and I chatted recently, preparing for this episode, we both agreed that there are a lot of Roman women that are very important.
And very interesting.
And extremely interesting, and if I dare say, a little dangerous.
Ariana Grande reference? Dangerous woman?
Sure, because we are going to have a series of episodes in the first season known as Dangerous Woman.
Mm.
And the first subject will be our next episode, episode 5. This will be strictly on the life and times of Livia Drusilla, the wife of Augustus / Octavian. And I'm further excited to say that we will have a special guest with us. This is a formally educated historian who is on her way to a, I believe, doctorate degree.
Wow.
Her name is Jackie, and she has been our consultant on these episodes, but she will actually participate and kind of lend a little bit of expertise that certainly I lack. But she's also a Zoomer. I think this kid's like, I don't know, 23, 24 years old, something like that.
Wow, so, and already getting her doctorate degree. That's
yeah.
Great.
Yeah, we're going to keep it with the Zoomers, but we're going to get a little more formal and a little more educated. And I think this is Livia Drusilla of the Claudian family is indisputably, in my opinion, one of the most important figures in the history of the world. And I am very, very, very excited to talk about her. I can also tell you, I don't know about guests because that's a little harder to put together, but I can also tell you that there will be an episode, a full episode just on Cleopatra, on her entire life.
I'm really looking forward to this.
And someone that I'm pretty sure you've never heard of, but I think you'll really, really like when we talk about her. This will be towards the end of the first season. She was a late Roman woman named Galla Placidia.
Rings a bell.
And had a lot to do with Christianity and stuff like that. So I'm very excited to talk about her. But yeah, next episode, Livia Drusilla, Dangerous Woman episode 1. I'm very excited. I hope you are too, Maddie.
I'm so excited. I can't wait.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone. I'm Roly.
I'm Maddie.
Our editor
thanks
is Nick.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Yes, our editor is Nick. Our consultant is Jackie. Thanks for listening, and we hope you keep tuned in. Thank you.
Yep, thank you.